Happy Wednesday. Welcome back to another episode of Morning Coffee with your host, Rick Alexander. Today, I have a long-form interview show for you, and I'm talking with Kate Jacone, who is a U.S. Air Force veteran, a student of psychology, and she's also the host of the Sierra Hotel Echo podcast. And we have an illuminating conversation about how the grind can really get to you over time and how sometimes when you engage in creative pursuits, and really I would extend that to say in trying to make something of yourself, perhaps one of the most difficult parts of that journey is trying not to lose yourself in the validation of whatever it is that you're doing, trying to keep it pure in some way, trying to keep it coming from the heart. And so Kate talks about how she really started losing track of her passion in her projects. And so she has decided to take a step backwards. And it's something that, of course, I think during this time, this pandemic time specifically, that we can all learn from. And of course, that's something I've been talking about since the beginning of this pandemic, which is just use this as a moment to take a step back, to reflect on your life, to ask yourself some deep questions that are difficult, you know, the difficult questions that you don't necessarily want to ask yourself when you are in the midst of the hustle because you feel like you don't have time to slow down. I think if we can all agree on anything right now, it's that we absolutely have time to slow down. And so I think Kate sets a great example, and she goes into a lot of what she's been doing during this time in order to reflect. She talks about her journaling practices and the thoughts that have come up for her. So I would encourage you to listen to this one actively and really think about what it would mean to create some space in your own life so that you can ensure that you are going in a direction that you're pleased with. Without further ado, on to today's show. All right, welcome back to another episode of Morning Coffee with your host, Rick Alexander. And today I'm speaking with Kate Jacone. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
So, you know, we were talking a little bit pre-show about what this conversation was going to look like. And right now you're in a period of your life, from what it sounds, that's as a creator, right? Pretty difficult to face and to go through and to even give yourself the space to take a break from your creative pursuits. And I'm really excited to get into all of that, but let's start just by talking through a little bit of, you know, why or what's the motivation behind you taking some space from your creative pursuits?
Yeah. So I like to think of myself when it comes to me as a creator twofold. One, like what people know me for is making content and podcasting and really being in the veteran community as far as being a voice for female veterans, especially. But also there's another side of my career of pursuing research, especially when it comes around mental health or public health or neuroscience. And one thing that really attracted me to research is being in the science realm, but creating, right? Research is taking your ideas and acting upon them and using different methodologies to, you know, like experiment essentially. And last year, I just really started noticing as I was really full driving both of those at the same time, how drained I was becoming. Mm-hmm. And then I started noticing too that my decision making was becoming, I didn't have time to make all the decisions that I wanted to make in the most true form of myself, if that makes sense. And I started realizing like, I should get a break, you know, I should give myself some break because any work that I produce probably won't be good work at this point because it's not being true to myself with giving myself the time to make the best product possible.
Right.
And so I just decided to take a gap year between undergrad and grad school after I graduated in May. This last May, and that also gave me time to really think if I wanted to continue to make the podcast Sierra Hotel Echo or the Sheep podcast. And I realized that it's probably a good time to really just give myself an utter break. And once COVID hit, it seemed like a better time. Like the world is slowing down, so why don't I slow down with it?
Such a difficult thing though, right? Like, I mean, I actually had a very similar experience with the pandemic, which is like I had sort of like a whole, you know, plan for the summer of projects and speeches I was going to give and seminars and talks. And as this happened, it's like, I realized instantly, it's like arguing with this reality is going to get me nowhere. So maybe it's actually, if I just go with it, if I flow with it, maybe it'll produce something more beneficial than what I thought I had planned.
Yeah. And it's also been almost like a daily struggle to be in a place of non-productivity where I'm noticing that I'm, you know, so much of my value is placed on my productivity. And then I was wondering, as somebody who is ultra productive and gets validation from their product, how much of it am I getting external validation rather than internal validation? Like, how much of my product is true to myself rather than true to what my audience is telling me they like?
Yeah. So has that been a bit of a struggle for you? Because, you know, our culture, we do get so much identity from our projects being validated and our productivity and the things that we're quote unquote getting done. So did you feel a mental struggle stepping away, or was it kind of it's time?
I knew internally it was time. I guess I get a little bit more in the know when it came to my podcast. It started off very much more informational based and educational based. Mm. But then anytime I did something that was comical or entertainment based, less away from information based, it was getting more validation. And so then I was also having more influential creators coming to me, trying to influence me to be more entertainment based rather than information based. And I felt like, well, at the end of the day, I have to pay my bills. And if they're seeing the value monetarily to go entertainment based, then I guess that's what makes sense, you know, and it's still my project at the end of the day. I still have control. So why don't I give that a shot? And I caught myself veering away a little bit from the core values of what I wanted for my own podcast, even though it was mine. That really took me, it took a hard look at saying, is it really even my project anymore if it's being so influenced by others, even if I don't have my name on it?
Yeah. So this is the entrepreneurial struggle as well as the creative struggle. And, you know, specifically, there's like an extra sort of whammy of pressure there when you're trying to make your creative pursuit pay for your lifestyle. Because now, is it about the creation anymore? Or is it about the end product? And so there's this, when, you know, as an entrepreneur, what you're doing is building the plane when you're already on the runway. And so as you're getting inputs from the audience, you start building something that's different than what you had originally set out to. And now you've got to reconcile these, where am I going with, where do I want to go?
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like I've been using analogy of driving a car, that every vessel and every project and every person can be like a vehicle and a path. And we're all driving a road with that relationship. Right. Mm. And it's almost like you aren't driving. You're still in the vehicle, but you're not driving, even though, you know, you pay the lien on the vehicle.
Right. Validation's driving now. And I'm just along for this ride.
Yeah.
And I think, man, I really don't know, I guess, but I think that a lot of probably stars and people that struggle with fame, they probably find that they're, oh no, I'm in the passenger seat of my own life now.
Yeah. So it's like, I know COVID is this awful thing that's taken lives and things, but it's been nice to reframe it for my life, to allow myself some time to look inward and kind of reassess like every single element of what I stand for and what I don't stand for, and kind of reassess like, no, I was right when I did or said this, or maybe I should rethink my position on this topic or this relationship or this person or this thing, you know. And it also seems like we as a nation are doing that as well, which is ironic. So it's been really nice to kind of reconnect with my own internal world. And that's what I've recently learned about, is that we all have a world, but it's divided into two, an external world and an internal world. And once you stop thinking about your external world, if you're putting everything on pause, all you're left with is your internal world. And I think sometimes when you are a creator, you live in the external world so much that you don't even worry about your internal world as much.
Right. Or you almost sacrifice. I know for me, it's like sometimes I thought for the longest time that in order to create something, I had to self-destruct in some way. It was like I was creating from the darkness inside more than, and so I really had no inner state to settle into. And
I think probably the Western mind knows a lot about that because there are so many people in our culture that if they had to drive to Target with the radio off and the podcast off and silence, like the stillness would create its own kind of chaos.
That's so interesting you say that. I thought two things while you were saying that. One is I started journaling every day. And I wasn't journaling like I used to. I'm literally journaling from my internal world and just putting whatever is inside on the paper and bringing it manifesting in life so I can reflect on it, you know. And there was just some really dark things that came up and I read it back and it sounded actually really beautiful. And I remember thinking like this would be a good song, you know, like this sounds like something that would be like an interesting song to hear. And I remember thinking, I was like, I wonder if that's why, especially like more entertainers that are creators, if like that's why they allow themselves to be in like such heartbreak all the time. You know, like we make fun of Taylor Swift all the time.
Right, right.
You know, like writing all these songs about heartbreak and dating these men. But then I'm thinking, but she literally makes money off of it. So why wouldn't she keep doing that? You know, like, I don't know.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Secondly, I was reading a book called Whole Again. And it had a point that I've never thought about that I've been thinking about a lot lately that said, essentially, like, if you stop and you realize you're empty inside, don't do anything to distract you from that. And don't do anything to fill it up, but just sit with your emptiness. And I never thought about accepting that your internal world might be empty, you know? And I really thought about that more. And I realized, like, I have beautiful friends and families and I have a beautiful child and I've accomplished a lot, but that has nothing to do with me internally. When I leave this world, I don't take it with it. So what am I going to take with me internally? And when you realize it might be more empty than you thought, it's okay, you know, and accepting that, you know, and that there's nothing, it makes it less motivation to create all these things on the external world, you know?
Yeah, it's similar to anything that you want to change in life, I would say, is like you can't unless you accept it, it seems, right? It's like you can't get sober if you don't accept the problem. You can't, whatever it is that you're looking to transform in your life, there has to be this sort of acknowledgement of what is as the basis for your change. Otherwise, you're not in a reality that's true, so you can't change it.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll tell you too, like when I was listening to the Audible, right, of this book. I wasn't reading it, so I was listening to it. And I think I was in the shower when the author said that. And it was like, it crushed me when I heard that. Like, he basically explained what it would feel like to feel empty inside. And it crushed me. I was like, no, like I've worked so hard for all these things and I've done so much in my life and like people validate me constantly. But I was like, oh, but it's okay. That could be true. Two things can be true. That could be true. And I could also feel like an emptiness inside. And a lot of people can. And that's not a bad thing, you know? And it really made me think more about Western, Eastern culture, like you alluded to. Like, what is it with Western culture where that would be a bad thing, you know? Because aren't we all the same at the end of the day?
Mm-hmm. And so you've been trained, let's say, professionally in a Western psychological model.
Yeah, exactly.
Would you say that, what in your experience is it, do they do a good job of addressing this emptiness in the Western model of?
No, this is very like holistic. And I think that's sometimes right now with this paradigm shift I'm having internally where I've been trained very Western, my mental science, if it can't be proven with science, it's kind of just a thought that maybe could, like it's abstract, and leaning more into like Eastern holistic type of thought patterns is, and even like not even Eastern, but even like thinking like, I don't know, is this a matrix? Like, are we in a simulation? Like, and rather than just be like, that's silly, like, and stop saying like that's silly, just say, oh well, I don't know, let's think about it, like let's look more into it. And it's really shaping like this new mantra in my life of being open.
Yeah, you know what's so fascinating about that argument is that philosophically you just cannot prove that you're not.
Yeah,
which makes you, I guess, which can give you a little bit of an openness to, okay, then all of the things that I think about this reality and this life, they're all, I don't want to say up for question or debate, but if I don't hold on so tightly to them, then maybe I can find other things that are also true about this experience.
Yeah, and I've been searching for different statements that resonate, and I write them down immediately. And I grew up very Christian oriented too. And I think American Christianity, on top of like being so scientifically oriented and being so externally validated, has created this type of person that just like, if it's not concrete, it's not true, you know? And
right.
Now kind of doing nothing essentially every day and allowing myself to do nothing and saying that it's okay to do nothing. And that doesn't mean that I'm lazy or whatever, or kind of like the first time in my life doing absolutely nothing and then thinking about all these different types of thoughts and philosophies that I've never thought about has allowed me to just really realize like the only thought that keeps coming up that brings me comfort is like, this is a temporary place, you know, like this day, this life, this world, it's all temporary. And you know, he can't take it too serious and you can't be too invested in it because it can come and go just like that, you know?
Yeah. I think for me, it's like at first that realization is, almost petrifying, right? It's like, wait, well, this is real, right? This, you know, but you know what happened to me is I was getting ready to transition out of the military and I was going through my own sort of dark night. I was sitting on the beach and I was watching a kid build a sandcastle with his mom and the tide was starting to come up. And so they started digging a moat around it to try to get the tide to like disperse around this castle, but the tide was coming too quick. And the kid, I think, realized it at the same time that I did. And he just started dancing and smashing his castle and jumping on it. And his mom looked at him horrified. And she's like, "What are you doing?" And he was like, "Well, it's going away anyway." And like, I was just like, the Buddha just came through the sky. I was just like, you know, it hit me in that moment though. It's like, and that is what we're doing here. We are, it's just impermanent. So it, you know, that has its own kind of quality and nature to it, but the way that we engage with it should reflect that. We shouldn't act as if it's something it's not.
I just recently had an experience like that too, where before I really got into this journaling of my emotions, like I would journal constantly all the time, but it was more like to-do lists or tasks or goals. Like it was so organized and like it would always have like a title and then points and all these things.
Yeah.
That served me so well for so long. And then I kept doing it. And finally I was like, okay, be more abstract. If this is your model, then this is your model, but be more abstract. And randomly I wrote a title for a list that was like, why am I important? And then I couldn't make many bullets for it because like, I just couldn't. And I was like, it's not like a lack of self-esteem or self-confidence, so I can't, but like, I'm not more important than anybody else, you know? And for me to make these accentuated list of my importance, which is say that means that I'm over somebody and I can't say that, you know? And so it took me a couple of days of like, am I in a depression? Is this like a sign of being depressed? And I was like, I think I'm just realizing I'm just one of these other humans and we're all important, you know, like I'm not more important. And it was really a nice way to be like, we're all important, you know, like me just being human makes me important.
Yeah. And it frees you, I think, a little bit from the need to put your identity in what you create and what you're doing. You realize like, because I think, you know, unconsciously it seems, and maybe you can speak to this, I've noticed in my own work that unconsciously, I think, and Ernest Becker talks about this in his book, The Denial of Death, that like unconsciously what we're doing with our creative pursuits is often just trying to negate our own impermanence. You know, we're trying to make ourselves more important. We're trying to make something that will outlast ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think being freed from that in some way allows you to then focus your attention and your time on what you really, really want. And that's its own like relearning process and kind of coming home to self, I think.
It makes so much sense to me.
So I want to real quick highlight your journaling process just because so many people, I feel like, ask me about journaling and it's something I've gotten a lot out of. Sounds like you do some stream of consciousness kind of journaling.
Yeah.
You want to talk a little bit about that process?
Yeah, actually I found one technique here that's been just life altering in this very stage of my life where I had several things I really needed to grieve the loss of. And I realized like to break them down, like break down each element of the grief, you know? And so somebody told me like, well, use the seven stages and journal for each stage of grief as if like you're only in that stage and you're journaling it. So I've been, you know, breaking down like losing X, Y, and Z differently and saying like, okay, well, I'm only going to journal and tap into that emotion of grief. So the different stages of grief are like pain, anger, sadness, or whatever. I can't remember where they are. I'm so sorry. But so then I just label it and I'm just saying like, okay, well, I'm just journaling pain right now for this thing. And then I just journal it. And it's been interesting because like I'm such a perfectionist that even like when I'm doing it, I'm mad that my handwriting isn't good, or I'm mad that it's not coherent. And I'm getting anxious doing it, but then I'm like, keep going, and I'll set a timer, like you're going for 10 minutes and like whatever happens happens. But at the end of the 10 minutes, I feel better. I can still read my handwriting enough to like read it out loud to myself, and there are thoughts I didn't even know I was having, you know, and that I was afraid to even admit to myself. And then after I finish it, I'm just like, I feel better. And it's actually not as bad as I thought it was.
Yeah, that is it. That's the exact realization I think that I have. It's like, you have all these thoughts in your head. So you give them an off ramp and then you read them objectively. So now all of a sudden they're not in your head. It's not you, you're reading them. Mm-hmm. And then you realize like there is some beauty in it and there is some space from it and it's okay. And even the dark thoughts. And then the other thing I think that you're hitting on there, which is important for people to understand, is, you know, you're looking at your handwriting and you have all of these judgments about the way you show up in the world. And that's happening whether you're writing or talking. But when you're writing and you're specifically trying not to judge, it kind of highlights how much you actually do. And so then maybe you can think about your own experience in this life. It's like, how often are you censoring and judging, subjugating parts of yourself? And that all of those reasons are what make it so damn hard to show up authentically in this place.
Yeah. And then additionally, I found I have a few people in my close circle that they're journaling too right now. Or they're like, I don't know anybody who's not going through a hard time right now. So like they're doing their own stuff, you know, their own shadow work, their own self-healing. And then so I'll be on the phone with them. I was like, do you want to hear what I wrote? You know, like, and then they're like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, can I read it? And it's like inspiring them to write. And then they'll say, you know, like, this is beautiful. And like, you're valid for all of these thoughts and cognitions. And like, then they're validating my lack of judgment and like they're not judging me, and it's just become like a really beautiful little ritual that I've created.
Cool. Yeah, I hope people pick up on that, because it the real hellish part is before you have a journaling practice and all that is in your head, right? Because now you can think, you see all that you write, it's like, damn, all that was in there, you know, bouncing around, confusing me.
Yeah, exactly. So I think for me, what's helped to tell like the audience is like, say like, well, I'm only going to write about this. It's not going to be open-ended. You know, I'm only writing about, we'll say person X at this memory point in time. And, you know, and I don't think we realize like how fast our minds are racing all the time. So if you wanted to just talk about a date, you know, like you went on a date with this person, you could fill up 5 pages with your thoughts on that. That 3-hour time period of your life, you know?
Yeah, totally. I've often said that I read to understand the world, but I write to understand my own world. Like, it's got to be that way, because it helps me organize my thoughts in some way.
That's so powerful.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things I wanted to talk about too is if I can frame this correctly. So it's like the soul behind your podcast. So I know right now you're taking some space and you're trying to figure out which direction, you know, it all goes. All of that aside, what was kind of the soul that made you want to start the platform in the first place?
Yeah, I think that the soul of the podcast, when I wanted to start it, was that I was tired of being overlooked. I was tired of years and years of like working so hard to only be overlooked. And I thought when I got out of the military that, okay, we're all on level playing ground. We're all just veterans now. And then I realized like, it's more of a dick measuring contest now, like when you're a veteran, you know, and the fact that I was still being overlooked while not wearing rank on my shoulders, you know, and not let, like, I think there's so much validity that like every day you put on a uniform and people, they may not respect you as a person, but they respect their rank, they respect their career field, like, and they see that and it's just known. And I think once you take off the uniform, you have to explain yourself and people may not even believe you half the time. And then once you ask somebody and reciprocate of like, well, what is your service? And in your head, you're like, who are you to judge me? You know? Mm. And I think that as a female veteran, when you take off the uniform, just to say that I'm a veteran and just to get that status across to somebody seems like a heartache. And I was tired of having to explain myself so much, but then I randomly started reading more research specifically about female veterans. And I thought it was just me. And when I realized like this is happening for years and years, I was just tired of disparities, like reading about the disparities of female veterans to the male peers and how much more statistically their lives are more difficult. Mm. And I just wanted to speak to that. I just wanted it to be known. And I also wanted to show the positive disparities that how female veterans and so many times over actually topple upon their civilian female peers, that there's something to the female veteran where they get more gusto and they're always one step behind in the beginning and then they come in first at the end of the day. And I thought that was so powerful, and I was tired of the female veteran experience when anybody hears about it immediately going to sexual assault when these women just crushed their lives. And there's something that they face, there's something systemically that they're facing that gives them this gusto to keep going, even though when you look at all the hardships they're facing just by stats alone, they're crippling. And I just wanted to explore that.
Yeah, I many times in my own career, like had experiences where I thought, God, it would be hard to be a woman in this place. Like it is, it's its own culture, you know, that's a byproduct of the job that it is. And so there's a lot of complexities there, but yeah, I totally understand that. And so as you've taken space from this project and this idea, have you found that the space has created room for new passions or projects or projects might not be the right idea, but just interest?
Well, I think I should have said this like beforehand, but one of the reasons that I realized like I need to step away from being a content creator is I was running low on fumes, right? Like I was running on fumes. I didn't have any gas in the tank. And then I asked myself, well, why? Like, because my circle is telling me like how great everything is and why should you be low on gas tank? Look how much you've done. And I realized I've been serving everybody else but myself. And I think going forward for the project, to answer your question, I just realized like, I don't even know if this community wants me to serve them anymore. I'm tired of fighting with people about basic human rights. I'm tired of just talking to brovets all the time who minds don't want to change. And I think that we're in this shift that I can see online, just kind of having a finger on the pulse is women are wanting to speak up more. And I just don't know if I belong in that arena anymore. I'm 4 years removed from the military. And there's sometimes where I would catch myself in conversations where I'm like, I don't remember what the acronym is, or I don't remember, or that like that policy wasn't even in place when I was in. And I was like, I don't know if my voice is needed. And I wanted to take some time to have some humility in that realization and wonder like, do I belong in the arena anymore? You know? Mm,
yeah. 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 These are all, you know, all these questions that you're asking yourself are, I think specifically why we don't take space from our projects, because to grapple with these is really hard. I mean, these are questions that quite frankly, we just don't want to answer oftentimes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also think that the podcast was getting somewhat notable and it was growing quite larger than I ever thought it would.
Oh, cool.
And I don't like playing around with the idea personally, like personifying fame into anything that I've done project-wise, because I don't think it's ever been that large. But having a small bit taste of what somebody who was famous would feel like, that is a toxic type of
validation.
Like, yeah. Yeah. And I really wondered, like, do I even want to touch it anymore and risk the sense of self that I have built for so long?
Yeah, man, that is really true. It's very hard to, I'm getting some feedback in the mic. Sorry. Yeah, that's really true. I think it's so hard to, because the ego like wants so badly to build itself on something. And when you start giving it something, it's so hard to keep yourself in that position of humility that allows you to retain who you are. I think that there's some, you know, I think that's one of the things that the Stoic philosophies are good at, is because, like, if you, I'm not sure if you're familiar with these, but so it's really like Marcus Aurelius, who was that emperor in Rome, has a book called Meditations, and it's really him trying to talk himself out of his ego. It's like, yes, these people praise you, but also, like, just understand that you're part of the whole, and you're going away just like all the other parts of the whole do. And they're kind of, you know, you'll be reabsorbed back into this universe. And so it's kind of like him trying to talk himself through those things. But I do think that we have to, in life, regardless of the path we go down, and I'm curious your thoughts, but just guard ourselves against building our identity and our sense of self on the wrong thing.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that, again, it goes back to that concept of emptiness inside and being okay that it might be empty and that you don't need to build anything inside of it. Like, being empty is okay. And I think it goes to that same philosophy of the Stoicism of, like, if you already decide that you don't have to build anything in place of anything that never really needed to be built, then what does it matter that you might build a false sense of identity with anything, you know? And I think that if you have a general acceptance of, like, well, it doesn't matter anyways, then you may not be enticed to even find an identity in a possible false thing.
Right, right. Yeah, I think it's so important that you, I guess that you just saw that in yourself. It's so easy, right? I mean, this is why we do shadow work, but it's so easy to get consumed in your own blind spots. And so it sounds like you've just had to build a really large level of self-awareness to figure these things out.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I don't even want to take any credit, like, towards myself. I think that there's just a bigger plan for all of us. And I don't even mean, like, Christianity. Like, there's something bigger than us. And I totally believe that. And I just had some recent, certainly I should just say, I had a miscarriage. And that was it was something to really, like, wrap your head around, to, like, and because I was actually telling somebody the other day that, like, when I was pregnant with my son, my 7-year-old, like, my entire personality changed as he was developing his within me. Like, I could totally, I know what he goes through because I felt it when I was with him in my life. And so in this pregnancy that I lost, I started to feel her. I felt like it was a girl. So it's just kind of like, we are these very innate creatures from the very point. So there is something to who you are before you come into the world. You know, like, a personality doesn't develop, it's innate from point zero. So it made me really think about, like, well, if you were already this way coming into this world, then why would you let any type of quick little thing within the world affect you, you know? And so it really made me just, like, okay, well, who was I at point zero? And am I being true to point zero now in year 31?
That's what we're actually after in growth work, because we're just trying to rescue our essence, which has been taught by the world that it has to be all of these other things.
Yeah, yeah. And so I guess that's, like, really the kind of, that's, like, the essence statement, the soul of what I'm working through right now, taking a break to make sure that I'm not going to sign up for anything career-wise, professional, romantic, like, anything, until I make sure that that essence of point zero is being carried out every day from every year on after.
Yeah. So that's, I think, for the audience listening, just as I listen to you talk, that's such a takeaway point, which is to just honor that sense of self, regardless of the pursuits and the endeavors and the projects and whatever it is that you get into. Yeah. It's like, that's a foundation you can really build a life from. And it won't matter as much what the world validates at that point, because you'll already understand who you are.
Yeah. Yeah. Going back to, like, internal versus external world, like, I feel like I can just talk about that whole concept forever. So I completely, everything you're saying, I agree with.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So has there been, because we have journaling, has there been any other parts of your life that people listening to this might be able to benefit from, and, like, that's helped you rescue that essence? Like, for me, sometimes I listen to music that I listened to when I was, like, 16 or something, and it, like, helps me kind of rediscover a bit of the punk rock that I actually am before I
Well, as somebody, I think anybody can kind of tell through this interview, like I'm a very person that lives inside my head, and I only will stay inside my head if it was up to me, you know.
Right. So,
trying to get back in touch with my intuition, which, you know, is in my gut, and kind of listening to my body more and being present in my body and realizing that every day I have is a gift, and that that essence, that point zero of my life from conception was a gift, and everything every day is a gift, and realize like the body that I have today won't be the body I have tomorrow because our atoms are constantly shifting, and to listen to my body every single moment of the day. So I'm doing a lot of body work where anytime I'm having any type of influence, a conversation, an interaction, a thought, literally thinking, where am I feeling this in my body? And so now I'm really starting to get more into like, okay, well, I know if I feel like a tingle in my left leg, that means like it's exciting and it's fun. Or if I'm feeling like tightness in my throat, that means that this is anxiety and pain. Or if I'm like, I'm kind of like rediscovering like where in my body specifically I feel different types of feelings. And that's been really exciting to kind of navigate, because I don't think I've lived in my body like at all up until this point.
Right, right. Yeah. I can definitely relate to that. Are you familiar with the chakra system at all?
I am, yeah.
So I think that, you know, growing up Western mind, like I really dismissed a lot of that my entire life. And I was at a retreat where it was explained to me better. And so, you know, it's helped me diagnose. It's like it gives you another layer sort of to look at with your psyche. Yeah. And so, you know, when you, what you can figure out is that the chakras, which are kind of like considered energy systems within your body, based on where you're feeling certain things, they're manifesting in these chakras based on the thing that you're going through. And so I remember I had this one time where I really sat with like whatever, I'm like, I got to figure out what I'm feeling because I have all this nervous energy and I can't like seem to settle down or calm down. And as I sat with it through yoga and some meditation, I realized it was like really in the solar plexus. And I started researching about that chakra. And I realized that oftentimes it'll be when you have bound up energy there, it's because you aren't able to make a decision because that's where your discernment is located. And so all these things are, you know, they're very esoteric, and I know that they seem out there to people, but it really just gives you another lens to look at yourself and understand, you know, who you are and what you're going through.
It's so crazy you say that too, because I haven't really talked to many people about this, but the week, couple days after I found out I was pregnant with this last pregnancy, I was laying down and like, I was just kind of like having so many questions raised. Like I was just so trying to figure something out and like several things out all at the same time. And I was just racing. I'm laying down and I was like, okay, do some mindfulness, do some body check. And it was almost like a checklist, the way I used to think about mindfulness. Okay, like, you know, these tactics works because you've seen the research articles that say they work. So you should just do those things. And then so I was like, okay, I'm gonna do a body scan or whatever, like just do what you have to do, you know? And then I was doing it and all of a sudden I got to like the top of my head, and all of a sudden I just felt like, you know, like the middle of my forehead was like white light, like blurred open. And now I realize that, you know, that's like your third eye, like,
and the crown chakra.
Yeah. And then it was just like such a like release of entire, like a rush of serotonin. Like I've never had that type of feeling before. And I was thinking like, oh, like is this pregnancy, my hormones, like all these things that might've been true. And I don't know. But I remember after that point, like I was like, all the answers made more sense to all the questions I was trying to figure out, you know. And I think that there's inherently something to be said about the chakras. Absolutely.
Right, right. Yeah. And that's incredible. I mean, that's such a good, you know, it's like that somatic intelligence or knowledge. It's like that knowing that happens in your body. It's pretty irrefutable.
Yeah.
You know, that dump of serotonin that you're talking about, it's like, that's experiential knowledge that feels like very real. And for us that like really like to be in our head, it's all the analyzing in the world just can't give you that feeling, unfortunately.
Yeah. And so I'm so glad that I've been given this like gift to be able to understand my body more at this point, and that somatic knowledge that you're speaking about, because I can live in my head all day and still not figure out problems, you know, like that's just
totally,
I wasn't given a whole body. I was, it's for nothing, you know?
Right. When I was doing some of the life coaching stuff, I would always say, like, listen, if you could think your way out of this, you'd be out of it, you know?
Exactly. Actually, I wanted to talk to you about this, and I feel silly because I started doing this, and then Zac Efron released that new docu-series on Netflix, you know, and then It was on there. But I started thinking a lot more, okay, about body and electrical waves and knowing so much about neuroscience, you know, and I was like, okay, like, we are electricity. And if my mind is, you know, not in sync, how can I be a conduit to something else? I was like, but the earth has like an electromagnetic field. So I wonder if I'm not grounding myself, because in the Air Force, I worked a lot on aircraft maintenance, and grounding is just like so important. And I know the science behind grounding. So I was like, I wonder if I can ground myself to the earth. And so I love doing positive affirmations, and I got away from it for a little bit because it just wasn't happening. I was out of my routine. And so I was like, I wonder if every morning, if I go put my bare feet on the ground, if I can ground myself to the earth of where I'm at, and that it makes me more present in my location, in my environment, in my day, you know, and then do my positive affirmations. And then I watched Zac Efron's thing, and they're like talking about that on there. And I was like, okay, like, at least I'm validated that it's like a real thing.
A thing. Yeah. Yeah. It takes you a minute to sink into it, but it works. Yeah, totally. That's great. You know, it's funny. One of the things that I feel like if I'm just hearing from you in this process is like, you're really doing a good job at honoring your humanity in all of this. And I think that that's the part that in the Western mind, if, you know, for the great things that that Western culture has given us, like technology and the understanding of neuroscience and all the things that we're talking about, you know, if there's a shadow to that light, it's something like the fact that we often treat ourselves as if we are machines, or if other people are a number, you know, to get things done, to get to a different end. And so we treat ourselves and we treat other people like they're a means. And I think if you just can pause in all of that and honor the fact that what you actually are is human, it starts to create space in your life to find where the dissonance is coming from.
That's so true, because I've been getting into astrology more because I've always loved space. And I'm like, there has to be something more to astrology than the placebo effect of it, you know? And so I actually hired like a true astrologer to like read my chart, and like other people that are prominent in my life as well. And he said, and to what you said, basically, he's like, you treat your body like it's a horse, like it's not even yours. And you treat it like a thoroughbred horse. Like you know that it needs exercise X amount of time. You know, it needs to eat X amount of things. You know, it needs its vitamins, and it needs to go to the vet, but you're not living with the horse. Like, you're just treating the horse just like this prized animal.
Right.
Not even owning that the horse might be you. Like, you're never taking it on the beach and running and having fun with it. You know, at the end of the day, it's still a horse. It's not just an athlete. And it made me think about that a lot. Like, I can start to live in my body more and have fun with it.
Yeah. Wow. That's such a realization. Like, well, especially when you're doing it, right? When you know you've been doing it, you're like, oh, damn. You know, when I got out of the military, actually, one of the things that I did is I committed to playing for 4 hours every single day. And 4 hours of play is so hard.
When you become a parent and a child fundamentally is allowed to play, and I realize I can't play with them. I've literally had so many therapy sessions like 2 years ago where I was like, I can't play. Like, I don't know why I can't play. Like, because all I'm thinking about is all the things I want to do productivity wise. And then I'm realizing, I'm like, I'm so mad. I wish I could go back 2 or 3 years ago and just play with my son, you know, when he like did things that he doesn't do anymore, you know. I'm like, damn, I wish I could just play better.
Yeah. It is so hard. And it's specifically hard when you've grown up in a culture that like prizes work so much, you know. It's like, yeah, what we do here is work. And if you're a good human being and a good adult, then what you do is work. And it's like, and maybe you hate your life, you know?
Exactly.
But yeah, as long as work is a virtue, it becomes very hard. You know, one other thing that I wanted to say too, before we move on to the final couple questions here, is that this idea that there's an intelligence or an inner knowing that exists in your body. I would say that when, just for the listener, it's like when you're listening to things like you and I talk, for example, the truth resonates, you know, at a cellular level. It's like, it's not all like our world isn't all heady. And so I think that just to be able to pay attention to like, well, what is resonating? What does, those are the things that you want to like learn to follow and cultivate for yourself mm-hmm. and get better at listening to.
Yeah, that's so true, because I'm doing that a lot more, and that Will and Jada thing came up and my friends wanted to watch it because now I live with some friends, and so it was on. So I was watching it with them and I was like, I don't like it. Like, I don't know why I don't like it, but I don't like it. Like, I don't, because they were at the Red Talk table or whatever and they're talking. And I was like, I don't know. Like, I'm feeling very like icky watching. Mm. I don't know why, you know? And they're like, well, and then so they're conceptualizing it. They're like, well, they had to do this for this and that and whatever. And I was like, I don't know. I'm not saying why it's bad. I'm just saying I don't like it. And I remember thinking like, I'm allowed to disagree with you all. I'm allowed to sit in my body and watch this and experience it and say I don't like it, you know? And
yeah,
people can't explain like cellularly, like you're saying, I just didn't like it.
If I could tell, I've already stopped script like 100 times to be like, if I'm listening to this, but if I'm the audience listening to this, I would like say that right there, that you are allowed to disagree. It's like, we think that if I don't like something, that means it sucks. Right. And that's how we almost talk a lot of times. It's like, oh, that song sucks. It's like, mm-hmm. no, does it suck? Or do you just not like it? Cause those can't be the same thing. You can't be the emperor over everything that's good in life. And so to just give yourself permission to have disagreements is like, at least, you know, it frees you up to go in an authentic direction without thinking it says something about who you are as a person.
Yeah, exactly.
Great. So before we get into the final question, if for people listening to this that want to follow along with you and support your journey, I know you don't have projects right now, but where would be the best place for them to just do that?
I mostly am active on Instagram and Twitter. So my Instagram is Kate, KAIT.she. And then my Twitter is just at Caitlin Chacon. So KAITLINCHACON.
Awesome. Well, I will link both of those up in the show notes. So guys, if you're driving your car or at the treadmill right now, you don't have to worry about stopping. Okay, final question. If you could have morning coffee with anybody in the world, dead or alive, who would you have coffee with and what would you want to talk about?
It's so interesting that you, I didn't know you were going to ask this question, but so I've always, my brain crush is Albert Einstein. Like I just, everything about Albert Einstein from the point of when I first really understood science as a teenager just resonates with me. Like I feel very akin to him. So absolutely him. And I think it even goes into a little bit of what we're talking about, that like, he's one of these geniuses that have like, just shaped so much of our lives, and science to begin with, and physics plays into so many roles of science or technology that we have nowadays. But he himself was this foundational person, and he knew that. Like he was actively getting fame towards the end of his life because of his science. But right. he has so much humility. Like I read one of his quotes today randomly. I was just looking at different things he said, and he said, I'm going to say it wrong, but essentially he says, there's two things that I know that are absolutely true. One, we don't know everything about the universe. And two, humans are stupid, or basically. And I love that. Like this man is a genius and he recognizes he himself is stupid too. You know, that like that sense of humility is just breathtaking.
Yeah. Yeah. That is such a good answer. I don't know if you've ever, his thoughts on God are incredible too. Like he's known for his science, but his metaphysical like thoughts, I think, you know, I think he's just so smart that he came to the end of his knowledge and saw it and was like, oh, we're nothing here. There's something.
There's so many layers to him as an individual, historically, what he lived through. Like I would absolutely want to have coffee with Albert Einstein.
Yeah, so great. My favorite quote by him is he said that, well, I don't even know if you could, but I have so many quotes, but he said something like, you could live as if nothing's, there's two ways to live. One is if nothing's a miracle, and the second is if everything is.
Yeah, the duality of everything. Yeah. Yeah.
So good. Kate, thanks for joining me. This has been great. I really appreciate you being open with your own process and your own journey. I know it's like hard to, you know, relive these things. I think though, people listening to this, there's so much that we could get out of it.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.